This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Welcome to Joe Plum's Political Soapbox on Vectis Radio.
Yes, we can.
Because Brexit means Brexit.
This, Mr. President, is a remarkable record.
The Isle of Wight Zoo is having difficulty importing a tiger.
My father gave me a small loan of $1 million.
Which we wouldn't have if we listened to the muttering idiot sitting opposite me.
Joining me on the show today, we have candidates from Newport and the South Wight. Hello and welcome to Joe Plum's Political Soapbox on another crazy week of politics here on the Isle of Wight, with the news yesterday that Andrew Turner is resigning after some comments he made at Christ the King about homosexuality, saying that he thinks it is wrong and dangerous to society. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about this. We have got a special show next week where we're going to be talking to lots of people from the LGBT community and some conservatives as well, to kind of get their views across on this. So next Saturday, between 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock, you'll be able to listen to that special show. And also, we are live from the count this Thursday night, because it's election week, so you'll be able to hear all the results as they come in our almost sports style commentary of that all night long, if we can stay awake for the whole entire time. But today we are focusing on the local elections, and we're focusing on the areas specifically of South Wight and Newport. And I've got a wonderful array of guests in today. So I'd just like to start by getting you to introduce yourselves, telling me about where you're standing and the party that you're standing for.
So I'm Julie Jones-Evans, and I'm the independent candidate and current councillor for Newport Central.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Rebecca Blashford. I'm standing for the Green Party in Newport North.
I'm Bob Blizzard. I'm standing for the Liberal Democrats in Lake North, and I'm currently the Isle of Wight councillor for another week in Sandown North.
Okay. I'm Ron Mosnicker, UKIP, standing for Newport East.
I'm Stephen Cockett. I'm standing for the Green Party in Ventnor West.
Okay, and a nice spread across the island, which is wonderful. So I just want to start by asking what you think the biggest issue facing people on the island, looking at this local elections that we've got coming up. What do you think, listening to people on the doorstep and their things, what is the biggest concern that people are having before May the 4th today?
Well, keeping it very local for me, it's traffic in Newport, it's residents parking, air quality as well is becoming an issue, and affordable housing as well. So those sort of kind of, you know, bread and butter stuff is, affects everyone's daily lives.
For me, it's disconnection between the local people and the local authority. I'd like to see that gap narrowed significantly.
Well, for me, my biggest issue in Lake and in the Bay is the shambolic way in which the Sandown Bay Academy is being run, and I'm in the process of addressing that particular problem. I've been in touch with the Regional Schools Commissioner, and what we definitely need is to see a new sponsor to replace AET, who have done a thoroughly bad job.
Newport East, I've only been in the post a few weeks, but what I hear is people don't like the traffic jams and they don't like the parking problems.
Traffic always comes up in conversations, and additionally with me on the school run, frequently people have told me they're not happy about the children not being able to get local places at local schools, their children having to go on further and further afield to get into education. And additionally, what constantly comes up is cynicism. And I would very much like to think that the next wave of councillors would be prepared to engage more and more and more with the local people.
Okay, and traffic is something that I wanted to talk about first, because obviously Newport being that central hub on the island for all cars, really, and a friend of mine used to joke that it was an Isle of Wight law that everyone must pass through Coppins Bridge at least twice a day. even coming onto the show today, it was a big traffic jam. I'm just trying to get off the dual carriageway. A challenge, and I think something that a lot of people are talking about and are worried about, is about the traffic situation in Newport. We've seen Island Roads within the last council run. What do you think we can do about solving the problem, Bob, of the traffic management in Newport?
Well, clearly it is a problem, Joe, because I think I followed you off the bypass and had the same problem. I mean, clearly there's... whilst it wasn't too bad, actually, today, coming down Long Lane and into Newport, down to the Coppins Bridge roundabout, getting off the bypass was horrendous, and that's largely due to traffic turning on, at the mini roundabout, either to go... towards Lidl's or towards the industrial estate, and traffic wanting to go the other way, you know, being held up. So clearly this needs to be looked at. I'm not sure exactly what the solution is. And fewer cars on the road clearly would be a solution if we had a way of taking them off the road. And a traffic study, I think, is needed to deal with that problem.
Julie, I know you've done a lot of work in Newport to kind of work on this and put forward things like the 21-hour speed limit. What would you like to see in the next kind of council doing to help traffic in Newport?
Well, it's a twofold approach. Just had £9.5 million from the government to go towards improving junctions in Newport, which will significantly improve the way the dual carriageway and Coppins Bridge actually works. One of the things they're actually going to not have be able to exit from the High Street onto Coppins Bridge, so that will be one less arm, and that will sort of flow more freely. But you know, as Bob said, it's getting less cars off, and it's getting the 20 mph in, because then that will encourage people to make the shorter journeys, under 5 mile journeys. So if we can create the environment through making it better for pedestrians, but also having more cycle routes, encouraging sustainable transport and using the buses more, it's that kind of approach. So it's a two prong. So let's sort out the junctions, because that again will enable us to put cycle lanes in, and also to put pedestrian crossings in. So that will help as part of the solution. But yeah, long term, it has to be sustainable transport the way forward.
There's been a lot of complaints recently about in the kind of national news about the council's just sort of putting in a cycle lane to make it look like they're doing things to encourage people to cycle, but actually it's just an extra bit of the road that it can't be used anymore, and we're wasting those spaces. Do you worry that this could be the case?
No, because on the island we've had like 4 or 5 years of government money to create you know, the environment, the hearts and minds about switching to use sustainable transport. So we've got lots of projects that encourage cycling. We've got a new cycle hub at Cowes, for instance. We've got the new cycle hub going down, well, it's actually the riverside, be opening soon, won't it? Got the great cycle lane going to Cowes and back, looking at the commuter route, the one out to Sandown, and locally in Newport we're working on the Gunville Greenway, so that's getting out to West White. So it's about building on the hearts and minds stuff. We're only the second authority in the whole country that's had an extra year of access funding, so we're doing really, really well with the hearts and minds. Just need to get the hardware in.
Okay, Ron, what do you think about this, and about ways that we can improve traffic management? Is encouraging more people to use other forms of transport the solution?
Yeah, I think so. I think I totally agree. The 20 mile an hour limit certainly something to, particularly locally, because what happens is they come, all the traffic builds up, anger builds up, and I know where I live. They've whizzed down roads and they're rat runs, and they're very dangerous. So certainly speed management. And my kind of dream is, it's not a magic, it's kind of a magic wand, is actually to move everyone to electric. That's what I like to see. You've got a 20 mile piece of rock here, and I think you've got a perfect situation to do that, frankly.
Yeah. And so we're talking about electric and moving into cars. Do we think that this is something that the council could support, an initiative that you could push forward, and how would we encourage an electric car?
Basically as an idea, I'd very much be for some like a park and ride kind of scheme, really. So people coming on the island would park. We've got the start of it, and basically if all the visitors use electric cars, that's one thing, and then to encourage all the locals to use electric cars as well. It'll take time, but I'm sure it'll happen.
Stephen, what are your views on this? Do you think the kind of an electric aisle is a possibility, or is this something we've pushed in? You know, we've heard a lot about the, you know, previous government saying let's encourage everyone to use diesel, and then that's not a very good idea. Is everyone going, oh, let's use electric, and then in a few years' time we'll have a similar situation where, oh no, we shouldn't have really pushed that?
Well, of course, electricity has to come from somewhere, and at the moment a lot of it comes from gas-fired power stations, doesn't it? But that's gradually changing. But broadly speaking, I fully agree that electric vehicles, they are the future. They will be rolled out extensively throughout the world within the coming decades, and the Isle of Wight, given the geography of the Isle of Wight, presents an absolutely perfect place to roll these out in an accelerated form. And certainly what I would like to do is address the manufacturers directly and try to draw them onto the island and say, look, here is the test bed you've been waiting for. Come, see it. And further to that, on the subject of traffic management generally, I would like to see planning decisions that are not so Newport-centric. Everybody comes to Newport because they have to come to Newport. And if we can start to put some stores in other places around the island, it's going to be a good idea. And finally, I'd like to say, in the village where I live, there's an excellent local shop. And this local shop alone must prevent thousands of car journeys per year. So if we can support these smaller businesses, it prevents people getting in their cars, driving to supermarkets and so on.
So, Rebecca, would you like that kind of the almost breakup of the Newport hub and have it more spread out across the island? Is that a solution to this traffic problem?
I think it would help. Obviously, that doesn't necessarily help the smaller shops that are in and around Newport, who tend to get more passing traffic from the bigger shops these days rather than visit specifically for them. So I think that obviously would have its own issues. For me, from the electric car point of view, obviously that's great, and as a thing in the future, that's something that I think we should be aspiring to. However, on the island we have this awful position where we have so many people who live below the poverty line, who, if they can afford a car, because a car is a cheap old car, is actually cheaper to run than to take your family on the bus or even to get to work on the bus. That's a huge issue. For me, I'm 36 and I still don't drive because I can't afford the lessons and a car, you know. It's a real trap once you hit past the living at home with mummy and daddy. It's very difficult to then start doing that. But from a bus point of view, especially if you have children and like me, you do the school run on the bus, it's incredibly expensive. So I would like to see, I know that Southern Vectors obviously have their own issues with running a business from the island, but I would like to see the prices come down to encourage more people who have very little choice on running a cheap old inefficient car or the bus, be able to make a few more choices there, because while electric's great, it's still very, very expensive, and it might be cheaper to fill up, but you still have that capital payment, and most families are not going to be able to raise the capital to be able to afford those.
Bob, do you think that buses and improvements in public transport would be one possible solution to this? What can the council do to help aid Southern Vectors or help aid those kind of community partnership routes that are going on around the island?
Well, I think the council already aids Southern Vectors with the fantastic amount of money it gives them for the free bus pass scheme. I'm in favour of supporting local groups to provide community bus facilities. That did start a few years ago. It seems to have, the support from the council seems to have tailed off. So we need to, the new council will need to revisit that. That would certainly help. Anything that you can do to get people onto public transport is a good thing. And the other thing that I will mention at this stage is the importance of Island Line. Okay, it doesn't run to Newport, but it connects the bay with Ryde and routes to the mainland, and we need to keep Island Line within the franchise, within the South West Trains franchise, hold their feet to the fire and make sure that they do the necessary improvements that need doing, improve the stations, and again, I would be in favour of the council giving back the payments that it used to give until it was stopped by Councillor Pugh in about 2012 to allow people with bus passes to be able to use Island Line trains on the island.
Julie, in terms of Newport being a kind of centre for many things, one thing within the Newport and the South region is the number of schools. So you've got Carisbrook, Christ the King, and Medina as secondary schools within the Newport area, plus the Free School as well, and we've already mentioned Sandown and the others within there. Obviously, within this term in the council, we've seen Hampshire take over children's services on the island, and with that, education. Would you like to see this continue? What steps would you like to see put in place to help young people in their education? Because obviously it's been through a horrendous time with the way that the two-tier system was dealt with. You may have opinions on whether, you know, the two-tier system is it's a better alternative, but the way that it was dealt with was the thing that I think even Dave Stewart apologised on behalf of the Conservative Party at our hustings the other day to say. So what would you like to see in terms of education moving forward?
Well, without a doubt, it was mishandled, that whole move to the two-tier system. And my son's actually in year 10, so he was one of the kids that was caught up in all of that. And I think it is a massive leap for some of our children coming from very small primary schools, for instance, to go into these massive secondary schools where it does take a while to sort of bed in, and they almost lose that year 7. It's big adjustments, and emotionally too, it's really tough. And you know, I'd like to see much more support for young children at school, you know, in this transition period, especially for their mental health, because it is such a tough and a lot high level of anxiety they go through, then the pressure of exams and all that. And I would want well-being to be at the centre. I know we talk about this word well-being, but it really needs to be embedded. And you know, I would actually like to see all schools at all levels, you know, going up from primary school upwards, that you know, mindfulness classes are actually part of our education system, because you know, we actually are very powerful beings, and over years we just sort of get pushed down, and we don't have our self-esteem. It can go rock bottom, and then you get anxious, and all these things stem from us not really knowing ourselves. And so that's, for me, that's really, really important. So embedding that in our young people, so actually you are a powerful being. You are, you know, you are wonderful, and you're full of potential. You just need to find that. And also, I would stop the sausage machine. Now, you put the, you know, remember, but going back to, you know, teachers leave those kids alone, you know, but it's the system, because not everyone learns the same. My son actually learns, he's an auditory star, he doesn't like reading, he's very auditory. Some are visual, mm-hmm. Some learn with their hands. So I don't think there's enough in our school system to enable that. Okay, maybe I'm talking big stuff here, but I think we need to have more diversity to allow our children to do that. Other thing I would do, I'd also change our term times. We cannot carry on, I don't feel, on this island with the Victorian system of our terms, having a 6-week period when, you know, back in Victorian times we'd all be going, you know, picking the harvest. Well, that's not where we are. I work hard and you know, we are busy in the summer. I can't spend the time with my son. I'd like to. And now I can't take him out of school either in term time. So, you know, it's really, really difficult on families. We need to put the families back at the heart of it. And I think we'd all benefit from to have a little shake up here. So it's a bit radical, but there we go.
So on that level of the kind of weighing up the well-being side of things, yes, and also the academic study, because, you know, there's been a lot of comments. We had the David Hall comment in the summer about, you know, the ghetto island, and talk about a sense of low achievement on the island. How do you balance that kind of, that we need to, students need to be working hard and need to be improving their grades, but also their well-being and their mental health is very important. So how would you approach that?
Well, I'm blue-skied, I'm going to be a little bit bolder as well. I meditate every single day. So when it comes to mindfulness, and it is actually one of my wishes later on in life to actually run such courses, I think it starts within the person to actually build their own self-value. And I think that will drive motivation and self-esteem, higher achievement levels. And what you find is people that don't aspire to things have a lower sense of lower esteem. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't have a family. I nearly did a couple of times, so I speak humbly in comparison to where you are. But I think we have to understand who we are inside. I think what's happened recently is making us all, you know, we don't have adversarial politics, hopefully we've got community politics, and we're evolving. So I think that's the core of it. Mm-hmm. And I was very blessed. I was trained, schooled in the grammar school. I'm very blessed indeed. And I'm for small, highly active schools to basically take small classes and build people with esteem and academic qualifications.
Bob, in terms of this, how do we approach it? You mentioned about Sandown and the kind of collapse of leadership there, and what we've heard about the governors and the academy there. when you've got those kind of pressures in the kind of organisation of these massive schools on the island, you know, Sandown was one of the largest schools in the country after the reorganisation. How do you balance that kind of thing with the students' wellbeing and with what they're doing when the place is in a mess at the moment?
Well, the role is quite a bit smaller now. I think the number of students now is about 1,100, which is much smaller than it was in the past. The great problem, I think, as councillors, those of us who are councillors after the 4th of May, is that with an academy, you've got no direct power. You've purely got the power of persuasion and influence. You deal with somebody called the Regional Schools Commissioner, who's a very anonymous figure based up in Croydon. So we have to pressure him. Certainly, we do need to get AET out. The problem, in an ideal world, I'd like to see Sandown Bay Academy return to being a local authority school. Legally, that can't happen. Under the present government, the legislation, once you become an academy, you can't go back under local authority control. So we have to work with where we are and what we can do and seek to get a different sponsor. Because clearly it's not worked with AET. They've made some cosmetic changes in the last few days. That won't solve the problem. We have to bang on until we actually get something done.
Okay, Rebecca, so what are your thoughts on this, the kind of academics versus the wellbeing side of things? Is that a balance that you think we can achieve?
I sort of stand on various platforms from this. When I was studying for my GCSEs, and after I went to college on the mainland, which was a great experience for me, but everyone was telling me about this thing called exam stress, and I didn't really get what they meant. For them, it wasn't normal to sit on the beach reading Shakespeare, and for me, that's exactly how I revised. So for me, I had this really awesome experience, which kind of helped enhance my learning because it was much more natural, it was much more organic, and it wasn't forced. Some people would say that I should have worked homework harder, I should have done all sorts of things, but actually, it was the best learning style for me, and had I been forced to do more, I probably would have rebelled against it or not done it rather than anything else. I do have as a parent, I have various experiences of schools on the island. I have had to remove my child from one school and place him in another. The difference in the schools on the island is huge, and I think there are many reasons for that. Obviously, some are not local authority. I think that all of the changes has put an awful lot of pressure on teachers, and we really do need to remember that these guys are still working 12 hours a day. You know, they might get 6 weeks off on the holidays, but I have friends who are teachers and who are head teachers. They don't get 6 weeks off. They're lucky if they get a week off. And I think there's an awful lot of support that they are not getting. I think that makes a huge difference to schools. I would say that the school that my son is at the moment is exceptional and is inspirational for the island. And I would love to see the models and the techniques that they use there as kind of held as a beacon for other schools, to be honest.
Stephen, so in terms of that kind of hit and miss with education on the island, that it's kind of a bit of a postcode lottery. If you're lucky enough to be living in an area that you can send your child to a good school, then they're going to get a good education. And how do you think we address that?
Yeah, it's difficult because, I mean, recent governments, of course, this is a central government issue, really. They have turned the education system into a shopping experience. And this is one of the reasons why we have so many schools in Newport, the same as we have so many supermarkets in Newport, because people want to bring their children up here. I don't know precisely how we can tackle it here on the island. What I would like to say is, coming back to what was said before about well-being and wellness for the children,
that's fine. Right, we're going to go to we'll come back in a second with that. We will go to an ad break now, and then when we come back we'll talk all about Andrew Turner's comments and just about the kind of support for different people within the community, that whole range and equality and diversity, and what we can do. So I'll see you after this.
This show is sponsored by the new Rembrandt Gallery, professional bespoke picture framers. We undertake all types of framing work. Visit us in person at 15 Scarrett's Lane, call us on 01983 529 285 or Facebook the new Rembrandt Gallery.
Hello, welcome back to the Political Soapbox with me, Joe Pub. Today we're talking all things Newport and South Wight here in the build-up to the elections, which is this Thursday. And we're trying to encourage as many people to vote as possible. Lots of things going out about this. And do go and vote. Do make your voice heard. And we'll be live from the count as the results come in for the Isle of Wight, and also keeping you posted about what's happening nationally as well with the other council elections that are going on. Now, this week I do want to talk about comments that Andrew Turner made, but mainly focusing on the community on the island and whether enough is being done to help the diverse community that we have here on the island, and whether, especially if you're in a role of councillor, then surely they have some responsibility, and you have a sense that you are representing the people that live on the island, and whether views like this and this kind of attitude, whether that is representing what you think the view of the Isle of Wight is, and whether it's right to be making these statements publicly. So in terms of the LGBT community and other communities from different minority backgrounds, do you think that the Isle of Wight is a good supportive place for people to live who are from these different groups? Ron?
Yeah, well, I speak from an LGBT background, and my phone has been red hot last night because of the comments on that, which we're all really sad for. We're sad for the island, we're sad for the LGBT people who are struggling, we're really sad for everyone. I mean, sad for the guy who mentioned it. But I think generally, after being here 2 years, I find the island very liberal, very kind. But I do worry that there's a lot of loneliness in the classical sense for some of the senior residents, but there's a lot of loneliness, I think, in another sense for perhaps LGBT within families who can't express themselves, and maybe religious minorities, because it's a very kindly island as long as someone doesn't step out of line. And it's not, you know, and you just get that feeling that everyone's very calm on the surface, but there's dilemma underneath. And I actually think there should be hotlines and support for lots of minorities.
Julie, what are your thoughts on this and the reaction to what's happened?
To yesterday's news, my reaction to yesterday's news? Totally shocked, because I've known Andrew for many years, and I've never heard him say this sort of thing ever. And I was shocked about that. I'm shocked that the strength of the comments as well. That was really in a school environment as well. So it's nothing but shock, really, for what was said. And I'm not even going to talk about what he said, because that's just not anywhere near what I think and many people do think. So I think it's even worth deciphering what he meant. But for me, just sort of bring it back to sort of the communities and the people maybe who feel disconnected, like Becca, you said about that disconnect.
Yeah.
Yesterday I was an advocate for two people in my ward, two separate interviews, and I was an advocate because they had a person of authority that going to speak to them about an issue, and listening to the language that the person of authority used and the language that the resident knew, there was such a disconnect there, and I thought I've got to be this link here, so I've got to decipher what they were saying to put it into layman's terms, and by able to be that advocate and be there, we actually had some quite good outcomes. And I believe if I wasn't there, because the residents told me afterwards separately, if I hadn't been there, they don't think they would have got to that, because it would have been that frustration, and people took you talking in strange language. I mean, there's another lady as well who's she's got a child, she's just come over from Afghanistan, a very poor English skills at the moment, her husband's working on that, but they had the health visitor come round, and the health visitor said, we have to look at the developmental stage of your son, and talking all the health language that we get, but they were like freaked out by it, and also freaked out by the fact they had to undress the child, to measure him, and that was like, they just couldn't cope with that at all. So I think we need to learn to talk in a different way, and just connect with that person a bit more. more, you know, and come, you know, come out from our comfort zone. I mean, I knew nothing about the council before I got involved, and I had to learn a whole new language myself. But it's very easy to slip into it when you're in that company. But yeah, but the isolation is a massive thing as well, as what you picked up on.
Stephen, do you think there is that sense of disconnect and isolation amongst different people on the island? Or, you know, we talk a lot about this island community and the fact that we are strong and connected, but is that just on the surface? Is that underneath there are still divisions?
Certainly, there's a very mixed community here, isn't there? There's a very large number of people who feel very, very connected with the community, who take pride in being islanders. But then, as well, there's a large amount of cynicism here, it has to be said. And part of the role that the council can take is actually by promoting alternative cultures as much as possible, so that people can remain engaged. When I grew up here, there was a fantastic nightlife. As a teenager, I had half a dozen or more places I could go on a Friday night or a Saturday night. As I understand now, not that I'm down with the kids, but as I understand now, there isn't a single nightclub on the island. There's just some bars which stay open late. And of course, nightclubs become centres for alternative cultures. And without that, the people don't have the escape. And this is part of the reason why a lot of young people also want to leave the island, because it can be kind of dull on a Friday and Saturday night when you only have some homogenous kind of bar scene. So.
Bob, this isn't the first time comments like this about the LGBT community have come up. We had Councillor Dupre last year. We had Charlotte Hofton interview article in the County Press. All within, you know, a very short amount of time against members of this community. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it demonstrates an unacceptable mindset with some people. You're quite right. Chris Dupre made some very unfortunate comments regarding the gay community on the island last year. It put Sandown Town Council in a terrible place, where effectively the town council had to effectively apologise for what had happened. It's simply unacceptable. People don't seem to realise that actually we've got an Equality Act in this country, which means that you're not discriminated against on the grounds of your religion, your race, your colour, your sexual orientation, disability or anything else. And until we can get that through to people, there will still be a minority of people who make these outrageous, uneducated comments, and we've got to work on education.
Along with education, Rebecca, and those things, but what about access for people within the LGBT community, especially those who are transgender, in terms of toilet facilities, in terms of ways that we can help and support? There are amazing things that go on the island. Boots run transgender nights where people can go down and buy makeup and go through a whole things and have lots and lots of treatment, and it's a fantastic thing that's kind of hidden and not many people know about it for obvious reasons. But how do you think the council could help kind of spread the kind of message and awareness for especially for transgender support, but for also lots of other different areas?
I think from a toilet point of view, I think most of ours are closed, so it's less of an issue. I have some experience with family members, but I think most of the friends that I have who would belong to that community have actually left the Isle of Wight, which I think is a real shame. They come back, but they tend to, you know, most of them have gone to Brighton or Birmingham because they like the scene, they feel more accepted there. I think that on the island we do have a bit of an issue being a predominantly slightly Victorian thinking culture. I might get shot for that, but I think there is still a significantly less diverse population here than there are in other places in the country, and I think until that changes, our version of normal will only change with the young people who we have coming up, and that will change over time. I'm not necessarily sure that it's a council issue per se. Obviously, I don't think that people representing the council or representing the people should be making those sort of comments. But I think on the whole, you know, these things will change as the makeup of the diversity of the people on the island changes. I think it will have to.
Can I just add, it's not just about LGBT, really. As someone who's been to Brighton Pride, which is the start and the core of Pride, that kind of started for same-sex. And, you know, I updated myself recently. I thought, it's got LGBT, AI, and a plus. And I thought, and there's new words I'm learning. You know, I'm 45 years as a, I'm pansexual, I believe. Sorry about that extra information. But anyway, 45 years and I'm adding classifications to myself. But it's about inclusivity. And one of the things, when I first started going to Pride in Brighton, I thought, hang on, this is a family do. And then I thought, hey, that's really great. And first of all, I thought it's really great because of the acceptance. And then it grew beyond that. It grew to inclusivity. And it's got to do with that mindset. And we are Victorian, small v, but it's a constant battle to become more acceptance of diverse, and it doesn't mean you have to accept anything in particular. It's just having an open mind.
Do you think the reaction to this and things like, you know, the first Isle of Wight Pride this year on the 15th of July, and the reaction to kind of what happened yesterday in the Isle of Wight, basically saying that is not acceptable, and the kind of instant resignation from Andrew Turner, do you think the island is moving a lot further forward in this and making big stands and making big protests? Stupid.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's getting these issues out of the shadows, isn't it? And I think because we've got social media, and you know, people, you know, you can just like say what you like now, can't you? Sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's not such a good thing. But the messages are getting out there rather quickly, aren't they? So, and people can debate more. So I think that's really good. So we've got the technology, and I think people are becoming more brave to stand up, you know, and be counted and say who they are. But again, that comes to that confidence, doesn't it? And knowing that you can be accepted, or is somewhere for you to be, to exist. I mean, when I talk to people, I just see the person. That's what I'm aiming to do every time, and looking past anything that they're sort of any masks that might be there. So just connect with that person because they're the same as me.
Okay, Bob, in terms of how the public view the council and politicians and the kind of relationship between them, we've seen quite a lively different instance throughout the last term in the council chamber and before when Pugh was there, and loads of different comments. Do you think that there is a positive connection between the public and the council, and do you think how councillors are behaving and the things that they're saying, if this is in this role of responsibility?
I think generally the public hold councillors and politicians generally in very low esteem, and you know, I think you have to say that politicians must accept the blame for that. When you get elected and you promise to do something and then do something completely different, you might recall that a few years ago when the Conservatives got elected, I think it was back in 2005, they promised to retain the three-tier system of education. A couple of years later, they did a complete U-turn. Not only did they do a U-turn to move over to two-tier system, which actually I think is the right system, but they made a complete botch of it. Subsequently, we saw our children's services going to special measures because of the way that it had been run. In the last independent administration, they came in promising they were going to have openness and transparency. They were going to completely change the way that the council was run and go back to, rather than half a dozen people making all the decisions in a cabinet, they'd go back to a traditional committee system where all members have a say on the big decisions. Within a few months of being in, I think Mr. Councillor Stevens and others found that actually being in a cabinet was quite a pleasant place to be, and they didn't wish to share power with other people on the council, so they completely did a U-turn on that. Until we get councillors coming in and actually doing what they say they're going to do, they will councillors and members of parliament will continue to be held in some degree of disdain by the public, and rightly so.
Stephen, in terms of this, lots of people go into the election, you know, some people for the first time, some people have been doing it a lot longer than that. they go into this process, and like Bob just said, you know, you can go in and you can promise anything you like before an election, but actually getting things done. And do you think that the problem lies not just in people just breaking promises? They're not breaking promises for the sake of breaking promises, but the reality of leading a council is a lot harder than campaigning for more toilets in your local area.
Well, that's absolutely correct. I mean, and there's a big problem that I see where the public do not necessarily understand the parameters within which the council can work. I've been for two discussions at the council here in Newport, and both of them were absolutely fantastic. And in 1 hour, I've gained a really fantastic understanding of what the council is responsible for and what it isn't responsible for. And I think it's very important for the councillors to actually communicate that onto the population as a whole, so that people know where they should be pointing the blame when things are not going wrong. And further to that, you're absolutely correct. There's certainly a problem with politicians promising too much. I would like to live by the maxim where you under-promise and over-deliver. And certainly I haven't been going around in Ventnor West telling people that I will be able to fix all of their problems. But I am telling them that I'll be listening to their problems, I'll be engaging with them. On a number of times, people have said to me they haven't received a single newsletter ever, and they haven't had any engagement with their councillors at all, which I find very surprising. And certainly the Green candidates on the island are committed to sending out newsletters on a bi-monthly basis. And this alone can increase the engagement hugely and hopefully lessen the cynicism, because we are all in this together.
Rebecca, do you think in terms of party politics and running a local council, do you think that there is place for kind of those the way that parties are working? Is that the best way of running a council? Well, we've seen an independent council for the majority of the last term in the Isle of Wight. What are your thoughts on that?
Kind of mixed. I think that if you have someone running for a party, then they should at least sort of agree with the general principles of the party that they're running for. But on a local level, I think you're electing local people, so that you should elect the person who you think is going to do the best job for you. Moving on with what Stephen said, I also attended, when the independents were in, one of the budget consultations, and I found it absolutely amazing because there was so much information there. We were able to ask questions, everything was broken down, but it was massively under attended. I think that there is a problem, and I think it's not just the Isle of Wight, that actually people aren't engaging. I think it's very easy for anybody to go, I don't know about this, you're doing a bad job, you're not doing this, you're not doing that, you're not doing the other. But I think that we can do so much to bring it to you, but on some level you've kind of got to meet us halfway and go, okay, this is what we want to see, not just when things go wrong, when things go right as well. I think it should be a two-way thing, and I would like to see far better communication, but I'd like to see the local community engage more, because they want to, and they know how to.
Julie, I know you're involved in certain Facebook groups about getting as many female candidates to stand for election and things. Do you think that kind of having more women around the table will help kind of either boost the productivity of how it's working, or just improve the way that the council is run?
It was several issues there. I mean, it was about a year ago I approached Vix Lothian and said we need to get more women through a Facebook group, and so Vix and I set that up together, called Council of Women, dedicated just to support women in any way, shape or form, get them elected, get them, you know, explain how, you know, you kept the process of becoming a councillor on all levels, parishes and town, as well as the county council. I think we've got 50% population, so really ideally you'd want 50% of the councillors to be women, to reflect the Isle of Wight you know, the balance of male and female that we have in our society, but also there's women work in different ways as well. I think that gives diversity. It's just about balance, really, isn't it? I've, you know, really suffered a lot of misogyny and abuse being a female counsellor from male counsellors. It's been really quite horrible at times, and I think about giving up. And some of the, you know, behavioural you asked Bob from some counsellors actually has stopped four women I know actually standing for council because they just didn't want to put themselves in that situation. So it's actually real. But you know, I've grown a thick skin and I've got a big grin. So I've learnt that over the last 9 years by doing this job. But no, I'm passionate about getting more women involved because we need it. It's just like that's natural, isn't it? Surely.
Ron, in terms of when people see that ballot paper in front of them. And, you know, we're at Vectis Radio, and I know On the White have done a fantastic job at showcasing many of the different candidates, but lots of people still won't know every name on that list. Are they just really looking at the party that's on there and just putting the one? And we've obviously, Theresa May has tried to mix things up a bit with the election that's kind of meant that that overlap has happened. But the local versus national thing is still going on, isn't it? Whether we would have a general election or not. Do you think people are just crossing because of the name of the party?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do. One thing I've noticed, and I'm new to this, and I've been here 2 years, I come from a business background. And all the things I'm hearing are exactly the business challenges. Communication, responsibility, this diversity. There's not one approach. It's not I'm going to win at any cost. This communal approach, which is really where politics, I think, is going. And that's why I've gone into politics. But we still have this problem between the national and the local. The UK have got a no-whip policy, which I like. That's great. So you can actually stand for local issues. But I would be absurd if I said, well, I think I'll become a Remain UKIP candidate. I doubt whether I'd be there very long, frankly. So I think, yes, I think people vote with the colour first, you know, what colour party you are, and then they look at the policy second. And I have to say, probably, what your face looks like, what age you are, what sex you are, you know, what people presume. So I think there's a lot of problems, actually, on that.
Okay, we're coming to the end of the show today, but thank you very much. If I can just finish, as we have done the last few of these shows, by asking you one word reasons for why you should vote for you. The public should be voting for you on the 4th of May election. So, June.
I've been doing the job for 8 years and I've done what I said I would do.
A politician's one word answer, thank you, Rebecca.
Because I care enough to try.
Experience and competence.
It's getting shorter, it's good.
Smiley and cuddles.
Single-minded dedication.
There we go. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming on. All the best for the election on Thursday. Do listen to the Vectis Radio. We're here all night with some music and all of the election coverage as it comes in, bringing you all the updates. So do tune in and listen to that. I'm probably sure I'll see most of you there over the evening. But thanks very much for listening to all of the different podcasts and the hustings. We should be able to have another chance to listen to that tomorrow evening here on Vectis Radio, I think between 4 and 7. So listen to that. Thank you very much. www.vectisradio.com